I'm Mike, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mike.
Chapter 5, How It Works, page 58, big book. Boy, it seems like we've been here a day and a half. We've been here a day and a half trying to figure out how it works, and now we get to do how it works. I'll tell you a quick story on this how it works. Is I'm in treatment, and I've been there about 3 weeks, so you know I'm like one of the old-timers. And this old guy comes in who's actually older than me, and he's sitting down next to the thing, and we're having the meeting. He looks at me, and he said, "How come they always read that how it works before every meeting? I don't understand that. We got to hear that same damn thing every time." And it suddenly dawned on me, and I looked at him and I said, "You know, as soon as you can hear it, then you won't care whether they read it anymore. Because the way the program works is encapsulated in these next few pages of how it works." And Don talked about conditional words, and I'm not going to say conditional every time, but you can start picking them out. But in the next three pages, there are a lot of conditional words. So it's how it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail. Is that feedback or is that just me? Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay.
At least it wasn't me this time.
I can get farther away. That's what they were trying to tell me.
Okay. All right.
I was encroaching on their space. So rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. I got two notes on that. One is, there's a story around, you know, the Bill was asked why it was rarely, and he said, well, it really should have been never, but if you put never in there, the alcoholics would, like, not do the thing just because they didn't want it, because you said it never could happen. The other one was, in the original manuscript for How It Works, it said, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our directions. Directions. It was changed. They didn't want to have too much direction. So it's a condition. I got to thoroughly follow the directions, the path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates, they are not at fault, they seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those too who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. So our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we're like now. A lot of people have asked, and Don earlier talked about the three questions that you ask when you're looking for a sponsor, and that's what How It Works is about. I get to this stage of the book, I've been through one and two, I've been qualifying myself. I think that I can say to myself that I am self-diagnosed as an alcoholic, that I want this program, and so now I'm going to get the questions. And one is, do you have a problem with alcohol? Which is what I've been answering for the last 57 pages plus a doctor's opinion. So then the other two questions are, if you've decided you want what we have, so that's the question. Do you want what we have? And are willing to go to any length to get it. Then you are ready to take certain steps. See, how do I know if I want to do that? You know, how do I know that that's the commitment that I want to make? I read the book. If I read the book and I see what you have and I've read the stories and I understand the spiritual experience, then I'm ready to say that I will go to any length. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg you to be fearless, condition, and thorough, condition, from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas again, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Nil means none, nothing, nada. Remember, we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us, but there is one who has all power, that one is God. May you find him now. original wording was, you must find him now. So half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and prayer, care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives would become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care and direction, direction of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, to another human being, the exact nature of our wrong. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asking to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed, became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So two notes on that. One is, I have a note on the side of my book that says, with arrows to 4 and 9, that said, freedom to live with and embrace the results of my mistakes. I didn't learn from my mistakes. You see, I'm being given the opportunity now to really seek the truth. Up to now in the book, I have been looking to identify myself with a problem and to understand that there is a solution. So we're ready to get to this decision point now and to move forward with the steps. So many have explained what an order, I can't go through with it. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like personal adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. So our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own life. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. C, that God could and would if he were sought. So being convinced, we're at step three. Being convinced of what? I'm convinced of A, B, and C. I know that I am it. I am alcoholic and could not manage my lives. I've taken step one. Is it clear? Am I convinced that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism? If nothing else convinced me, my own past experience convinces me. All I have to do is truthfully look at my life to understand that my history says no human power has been able to do anything about my problem. See that God could and would is what we've been working on. But it's could and would with a condition, if he were sought. Sought is an action verb. I'm getting ready to make a decision to start taking action. This is going to be experience. I'm going to start on a path of discovery. And I'm going to have to be doing something, to be taking an action. Being convinced, we were at step three, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood him. So just what do we mean by this, and just what do we do? The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. So there's a requirement. I got to be convinced, which is what I talked about in the A, B, and C. My self-will got me here. My self-will has ruined my life. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. My instincts are overdone, and I think I have good motives, And so I can always rationalize my behavior. I live in delusion. I tell myself a lie, and I believe it. That's how I lived my life. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like the actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits. So the next paragraph is what usually happens, question mark. And I like to tell my sponsees, this is what you don't do anymore. You know, up to now, nobody said you don't do anything. But I interpret this paragraph as being, this is what you don't do. You know, because I'm not ready to be told what I can do, but now I'm going to understand what I don't do, which is, the show doesn't come off very well. He begins to think life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself more. He becomes, on the next occasion, still more demanding, or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play does not suit him. Life never suited me, ever. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he is sure that other people are more to blame. He becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is his basic trouble? Is he not really a self-seeker, even when trying to be kind? Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he only manages well? Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things he wants, and do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Is he not, even in his best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony? You know, those are the descriptions of my activities. That's the story of my life until Alcoholics Anonymous. Nobody ever did what I wanted to do. Nobody ever could do it right. Nothing could ever go the way I wanted it to go. It was always about what was going to happen to me and how Mike was going to get what Mike wanted. So our actor is self-centered, egocentric, as people call it nowadays. He's like the retired businessman who lolls in the Florida sunshine in the winter, complaining of the sad state of the nation. The minister who sighs over the sins of the 20th century. Politicians and reformers who are sure all would be utopia if the rest of the world would only behave. The outlaw safecracker who thinks society has wronged him, and the alcoholic who has lost all and is locked up. Whatever our protestations, are not most of us concerned with ourselves, our resentments, our own self-pity? Selfishness and self-centeredness, that, we think, is the root of our trouble. So what's the root mean? The root's the root of the plant, the very foundation from which everything grows. It's the very basis, the very structure of my being is selfishness and self-centeredness. So I'm driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. We step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. What does driven mean? You see, I'm driven by 100 forms of fear. Fear that I'm going to lose something that I've got because I actually think I have something. Or a fear that I'm not going to get something that I want. See, something that's going to happen to me. My self-delusion. You know, my self-seeking. You know, I want what I want. You know, selfish means I want everything. Self-centeredness means that not only do I want everything that's mine, I want everything that's yours. You see, it's not enough that I get everything I want. I want everything that's yours too. Because the world obviously owes me everything. So I'm driven by the 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. Because when nobody's going along, when I'm stepping on the other toes of fellows and they retaliate, then it's poor me. I'm a victim. I can play it from either side. I can either be the oppressor or the victim. Doesn't matter to me. Because it's all about me. Take whatever position I've got to take. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation. But we invariably find that at some time in the past, we have made decisions based on stealth that later placed us in the position to be hurt. See, I don't want to hear. Lack of power was my dilemma. Now I understand what I have to deal with. The question was, what am I going to do about this? And it's going to tell me that it's my ego, it's selfishness and self-centeredness. The problem is me. The root of my troubles is me. So it says, the next paragraph, so our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot. But he usually doesn't think so. My instincts are out of balance. When we get to the fourth step, we're going to talk about instincts. We're going to talk about what's happened. We're going to talk about what we need on security, social, and sexual instincts. That's all I'm running on. I got no God in my life. All I'm running on is my fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pitying instincts. And they're running riot. So what happens? Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of selfishness. So what does above everything mean? Is there anything else up to now that Bill has told you that you got to do above everything else? No. Above everything means that it is the most important thing that I have to do as an alcoholic is that I must, there's no must in the big book, somebody will tell you. There's no must in Alcoholic Anonymous. I hate to tell you how many times in my book must is shaded. But you must be rid of the selfishness. See, it's my self-centeredness. We must or it kills us. God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them even though we would have liked to. Don talked about that earlier today, and we acknowledged it. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own willpower. We had to have God's help. See? My selfish, self-centered nature is the thing that I must be rid of. So what's going to happen? This is the how and the why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Wow, what an idea. It never dawned on me that I was not God. Because that's what I'd been doing. That's what page 61 is all about. When I'm the director and all the actors have to do what I want to be in control. I want to say whatever's going to happen. It's Mike's will is the only will. Mike thinks he's God. If it's not going my way, then it's wrong. If you're not doing what I want you to do, then you're wrong. That's a big thing. That's the whole idea in step 3. I am not God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter, in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal, we are his agents. He is the father, we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. Keystone on the picture of the arch that was in the package that you got. The keystone of an arch is at the center, at the top of the arch, the beveled stone. That if that stone isn't up there and that stone doesn't fit, it holds the entire arch together. It's the keystone. So Bill's telling me here that in step 3, that if I need to understand this concept that I am not God, that I am in perfect being, and that I am no longer going to be the director, I am turning that over to my higher power. I am no longer going to be the principal in the company, principal being like the owner. I'm going to be his agent. He's the father, and we're his children. See, I have a new relationship now. I'm no longer going to pretend that I am the father, the director, the principal. So the top of the page 63, then, are the third step promises. When we sincerely took such a position, that's a condition. What's the position? I'm not God. Simple. How come that words just don't even want to come out of my mouth? You know, I am not God. All sorts of remarkable things followed. That's a promise. We had a new employer. Whoa, there's another job for God. Being all powerful, it's a promise. He provided what we needed. So I'm going to get everything I need if, conditional word, I do what? Kept close to him and performed his work well. Well, that must mean I got to perform some of God's work. See? Wow. The promise is I got to stay close to my God, whatever conception of God I've got, and I got to perform his work well. What was his work? Probably there's a number of places in the book that it talks about it, but we just left it when we talked about step 12. And in step 12 it says, we carry the message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. That's our job. That's God's work. There's a number of other places in the book you can find out what's your job in Alcoholics Anonymous. Page 14, page 60, page 77, page 102. You know, in case it doesn't clear, you go to page 77. It's like, you know, to understand what my job is, because people always say, what's my job? Top of page 77, our real purpose. First top of the page, fourth little third line down. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. Pretty clear, isn't it? 102. This one's easier to find. Second from the last paragraph. Your job now is pretty clear, isn't it? Your job now is to be at the place where you can be of maximum helpfulness to others, so never hesitate to go anywhere if you can be helpful. And the other places in the book I talked about. So I'm going to be provided with all I need. You know what I really didn't like about that? It didn't say I'm going to get everything I want. See, because we're not talking about what Mike wants anymore. We're talking about what I need. Because I'm not making that decision, but because I was deciding what I needed everything. I never needed what I needed. I always needed what I wanted. So established on such a footing, so that's a new footing now. I got a new relationship with my God. He's the employer. I'm the employee. He's the director. I'm following the directions. I'm the agent to carry out the work that needs to be done. And for that, I'm going to get everything I need. That's a covenant. I've entered into a covenant with God as I understand God. And if I get established on such a footing, which is the next line in the book, what happened? We became less and less interested in ourselves. Ooh, that's about selfish, isn't it? Our little plans and designs, I'm not doing that anymore. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. My sponsor asked me, what was the last thing you ever contributed to life? I didn't have a very good answer. As we felt new power flow in, that's a promise. As we enjoyed peace of mind, I had never had peace of mind. That was a totally new concept to me. As we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, what do I get? After that promise, we begin to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. Wow. I'm not going to have to worry about what happened. I'm not going to have to worry about what's going to happen. And I'm not going to have to worry about what's going to happen after whatever happened. You see, if I'm not God, I don't have to worry about being immortal anymore. I don't have to worry about what's going to happen to me other than I stay right here in this moment. Right here. Today. Now. Be here now because I am an employee and I am following direction and I am here now living my life doing what God puts in front of me today. That's what I do. That's what this says. And if I do all of that, I'm going to lose that fear. But then what I think is the greatest promise in the third step, which doesn't get talked about a lot, but I think it's important because it says we are reborn. That word has some connotations that some people don't like, but I happen to think that it's an absolutely wonderful connotation for Alcoholics Anonymous because I'm sitting here in a room of dead people. I'm looking out at 50 some odd miracles. I'm looking out at resurrection as I stand here. Because none of us should have been here. None of us should have been in this place. We are the phoenix rising from the ashes that Don talked about yesterday. We have been given the opportunity to start our lives anew. That's a miracle. That's what I get to do. That is the promise that I want. I am going to find a way, if I follow the directions in this book, to be able to stop my life, set aside, clean up the wreckage of my past, understand where I live today, and move forward to a new life that's based on my service to others and to do the will of God. That's all I have to do. And for that, I get everything I need. The only thing I don't like about that, it's not everything I want. But then I'm not God anymore. You see, there's an absolute freedom in accepting that I'm not God and that I'm an imperfect human being. What this step is promising me. That if I can grasp that I'm not God, that I'm imperfect, and that's good, everything else is going to be wonderful. So now we're at step three. We read through this prayer real quick and then we'll talk about it. It says, many of us said to our Maker as we understood him, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties and victory over them. May bear witness to those I would help with thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. I love that prayer. The first time I read that prayer, I thought this is a good place in the book for that kind of prayer, but then I didn't understand why it said, then we thought well before taking this step. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready. That we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to Him. That's a condition. It's a huge condition on this step and a commitment to this prayer. I am going to make a covenant with a God of my understanding to move forward in this process to find a new way of living, a new way of life, and to be reborn. So we found it very desirable to take this spiritual step with an understanding person. And so I would invite all of you today, if you would care to do a third step prayer. We could do one together. It's a powerful experience. So, we all go to our knees, for those that like to do on their knees or not. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me, do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will.
Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always.
Most powerful decision you'll ever make in your life.
Don needs it. He'll turn it on when he's ready. I just got a couple more seconds.
Go right ahead.
We found a very desirable book said to take this spiritual step with an understanding person. You just did that. I'm the most understanding person. And Don's even more understanding than I. At least that's what he tells me. So what's happened is it's better to meet God with your best friend, spiritual advisor. It's better to meet God alone than with someone who might misunderstand. The wording, of course, quite optional, so long as we express the idea, voicing it how, without reservation. This was only a beginning, though if honestly and humbly made, an effect sometimes a great one was felt at once. So what did I get in this prayer? What happened to me? What did I just ask? What is the covenant that I just made with my God? I said, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. I am not God anymore. Relieve me of the bondage of self. I am so tied up in my selfish self-centeredness that I want relief from that, but that I may better do thy will. See, it's not about me anymore. I didn't understand that when I first read this prayer. I thought this prayer was going to say, God, you're going to take all this away so that Mike will be happy. My sponsor didn't tell me. That's not what the prayer said. He just let me read it enough times till I figured it out. It says that I'll better do thy will. Take away my difficulty so that victory over them may bear witness to those. Wait a second. What happened to so Mike's life would be better and the new Porsche would come along? No. This is the covenant that for me was an extreme decision in my life. I had to abandon myself utterly to God as I understood God, without reservation, with as much honesty and as much humility as I could find, because that's what was going to give me the promise to go through the rest of these steps and give me the strength to find my way. Because I know now I cannot do it alone. And I can't do it by any other human aid. So I keep close to him, I perform his work well. And we get to be reborn. Is that?
All right. That's been really good, huh? Thank you. Well, thank God we've been able to make our decision, which is the most... This decision we just made basically is a life decision that all human beings have to make at some point in time. I don't want to disappoint you that we're not special. We just found out about it late in life, that's all. Anyway, get myself together here in a second. You're going to have to give me a lot of patience today because this is going to be a kind of a long thing for you. And you might want to get out this piece of paper here. And I think we're going to make some more copies of this so you can have clean... You ought to have a clean copy if you choose to use this. I want to make a short explanation. But AA isn't done the same all over the world. Not even done the same in this room. And I use this particular form because it's simple. And I have to have simple. I will complicate anything. So, And you have another form there that looks like this form. It says 10-step inventory, and behind it, it has an asset list about all jobs, things I like to do, that sort of thing. It comes into play here. All right, we all found our sheets. We're all ready. We'll try to deliver more clean sheets to you next week so you can keep them for your own copies if you choose to do it this way. Now let me... let me tell you about inventory work. You will find that throughout the world that inventory work is done differently by different people, but it arrives at the same place. What is necessary to make that happen is that the principles be included in the inventory. Does that make sense to you? So as long as the principles are there, the form of the inventory really isn't that important. I have seen some that are so complicated I can't believe it. But it works for some people. The one I use is very simple. I want to go back just a minute because it's going to be important to our first four-step discussion. And somebody's going to wave at me when time to go I get real caught up in this, and you have to wave at me and tell me we're going to smoke or something. Look on 63, and I want to go up. Mike did a beautiful job. And I want to let you know from personal experience that he provided what we needed, and I took that line exactly what it meant, and I made decisions based upon that line. What is it that I need? No. What is it that I need in my daily life?
Air.
Huh? No.
Air.
Food, shelter. I need my instincts fulfilled. Got it? I've been fulfilling my instincts over the years and failing. Does that make sense? I mean, I've been married more than once. I imagine some of you two have also. I didn't plan it that way. You know, I have failed. I told you I failed at everything I've ever did. Failed at being a father. Only through the mercy and kindness of my children that do they recognize me as their father. So, what is God going to supply to me? He's going to supply my instincts. Ah, new concept. Because I thought that I wanted to supply my instincts, and in attempting to do that, I have failed. Because that woman's got to look that way. And she's got to talk that way. And she's got to be tall that way. You know. And oh man, I used to call them long-legged thoroughbreds, and they could go the distance is what I was looking for. What works in my life is a Shetland pony. That's what I got at home. Little bitty woman. Not my idea. See, my idea's got to be tall. So my first wife is 6 foot tall. My children are all great big tall people. So great big tall alcoholics. Anyway, so I have to come to let go. Remember that we're talking about, am I chained to my old ideas and concepts about in my mind what things have to be? Or am I willing to let God bring it to me? There's a whole different concept of life here. And I let God bring it to me. To be rid of, 6 and 7, of the things in ourselves which have been blocking us, 8 and 9. Our liquor was what? But a symptom. It was only a symptom. So we had to get down to causes and conditions. Lack of power is my problem. People who take no regular inventory usually get drunk. So I'm going to stop there for a minute, and we're going to run over to this book. That's why I told you we're going to have a little running around today. And we're going to take a look at step 4. And in step 4, Wilson gives me, here are the conditions, the principles behind this step. I'll just give them to you now. Action and courage. When you find your book, get ready. I'll give you the principles behind the steps. Okay. Action and courage. Thoroughness and honesty is necessary. Those are things you... when I tell you a principle, you need to pray for it. It is not yours automatically. I can't do anything. If the saint in our book that we talk about in this book in the 11th step had to ask God for power, he understood he didn't have any. I don't have any power. I live absolutely without any power. Anything I want, I have to ask my God. I have to talk to my employer. Does that make sense? Sometimes, I don't know about you, I don't do a lot of kneel praying. I get up in the morning sometimes, and I'll say to God, you know the family needs me to go to Costco? I don't know if we're going there or not, but that's where I'd like to go this morning. What do you want to do? And the phone rings, and I say, I guess we're not going to Costco. And I answer the phone, and it's some alcoholic on the other end, and he wants to talk a while, and he wants to do this and do that, and then the phone rings some more, and I say, well, maybe we'll go to Costco this afternoon if it's your will, God. That's how I live. It sounds stupid and silly, but it works for me. Yeah. First of all, he's going to tell me here how I'm created. Okay? God created me in a certain way. If you get into a car, men will understand, maybe the women too, but if you get into a V8 car and you start pulling off the wires of that car, that motor will not run. It'll run rough. If you get enough of that rough running going, it'll try to jump right out of the cavity where it's sitting. But if you put the wires back on like it's designed and bring it back into its design, it purrs. Does that make sense to you? I'm only out of design. That's all that's wrong with me here. Let's don't make a big deal out of this. I am out of design. That's all that's wrong with me. Here's my design. Creation gave us instincts for a purpose. It's how I'm designed to live. Without them, we wouldn't be complete human beings. So I need my instincts. If men and women didn't exert themselves to be secure in their person, made no effort to harvest food or construct shelter, there'd be no survival. If they didn't reproduce, the earth wouldn't be populated. I think we're talking about sex. If there's no social instinct, if men cared nothing for the society of one another, there'd be no society. So these desires for sex relations, for material and emotional security, and for companionship are perfectly necessary and right and surely God-given. There's absolutely nothing wrong with you. Nothing. You're made in the image of your Creator. And He gave you these instincts to be used. It's what is wrong with us, though. It's how we use the instincts. And the next part of the book says, yet these instincts, so necessary for our existence, often far exceed their proper function. Powerfully, blindly, many times subtly, they drive us, dominate us, and insist upon ruling our lives. I wrote in my book with no thought. Instincts require very little thinking. Have you ever been married, sitting somewhere, and all of a sudden you're doing that little dance with some woman? You know the kind I'm talking about? It's called flirting. And I know good and well I oughtn't be flirting. But here I am, just flirting away. Oh, my God, I'm flirting, you know. Especially if my wife punches me in the ribs and says, what are you doing? They dominate us and insist. My instincts are running my life. I can't get enough money. I can't get enough sex. I just can't get enough. Because these instincts just won't let go of me. Our desires for sex, for material and emotional security in an important place in society often tannerize us. Tanner is a dictator. These instincts are dictating my life. With us out of joint, a man's natural desires cause him great trouble, practically all the trouble there is. My natural desires, which are my instincts. No human being, I love this line here, he's not talking about you and me. He's talking about all human beings because that's what you are. You're a human being. We put way too much effort into this is alcoholic behavior. What we read this morning, Tilford said, that's a mistake. It's human behavior. And the quicker we do that, the better we're going to get well. Because as long as we hold ourselves up as, oh, this is alcoholic behavior and I'm just doing the behavior, you know. No human being, however good, is exempt from these troubles. All humans have the same problems. Every serious emotional problem can be seen as a case of misdirected instincts. Wow. That is powerful stuff. When that has happened, our great natural assets, the instincts, have turned into physical and mental liabilities. Step four is our vigorous and painstaking effort to discover these liabilities, and each of us have been and are. All fall short of the glory of God. Don't hold yourself up as some kind of a victim. We want to find exactly how, when, and where our natural desires has warped us. We wish to look squarely at the unhappiness this has caused others and ourselves. By discovering our emotional deformities, we can move towards their correction with God's help. Self cannot overcome self. God cannot change me unless I'm willing to be changed. I'm autonomous. I'm self-governed. He gave me the will. Will gives me the right or wrong. I can go towards my God or away from my God as I please. So if you're standing around trying to get some alcoholic in here thinking you're going to convince them, forget it. Here's a little promise. Without a willing and persistent effort to do this, there can be little sobriety or contentment for us. Without a searching and fearless moral inventory, most of us found that faith, which really works in daily living, is still out of reach. Now, I'm going to read to you a couple of things that are pretty interesting here, because when you're working with others, let's take a look on page 44 for a second. Second line down towards the side, it says, whenever a human being becomes a battleground for the instincts, there can be no peace. So you're irritable, restless, discontented, full of shame, guilt, fear, remorse, depression, whatever else goes with it. Now, you're going to run into some people as you try to help them, and these are the blocks to the fourth step. And you're going to wonder why I can't get the guy. I got him to do the third step. Why can't I get him? The natural power that every step comes with power. Promises equal power. Try to remember that. Promises equal power. And that's why he gives you the promises after the steps that you do the work. The first block we have on page 45, three lines down, is if temperamental, we're on the depressed side, we're apt to be swamped with guilt and self-loathing. We wallow in this messy bog, often getting a misshapen and painful pleasure out of it. As we morbidly pursue this melancholy activity, we may sink to such a point of despair that nothing but oblivion, which means suicide, looks possible as a solution. And we call those people, they're the really depressed people that come. You see them in the meetings. They're around, you know. Oh, this works for you, but I don't think it'll ever work for me. And here, of course, we've lost all perspective and therefore all genuine humility. I can have no humility until I get my fourth step done because I have no perspective to look at this thing in a right manner. For this is pride in reverse. This is not a moral inventory at all. It's the very process by which the depressed have been led to the bottle and extinction, death. And they will commit suicide on it. He never tells you something. He doesn't tell you how to get out of it. So now we come to the second guy. If, however, our natural disposition is inclined to self-righteousness and grandiosity, that's me. That's what my sponsor saw in me the first time he saw it in me. And boy, did he start chopping away. I mean, he chopped away at me. Our reaction will be just the opposite. We'll be offended at anyone's suggested inventory. Well, now you know the kind of guys that, oh, well, I've always been a good guy. I mean, well, you know what that is. That's grandiosity. No doubt we shall point with pride to the good lives we thought we led, before the bottle cut us down. We shall claim that our serious character defects, if we think we have any at all, have been caused chiefly by our excessive drinking. This being so, we think it logically follows that sobriety first, last, and all the time is the only thing we need to work for. That's all I need. Just stop drinking. And I will return to my old sweet self. We believe our one-time good character will be revived the moment we quit alcohol. If we were pretty nice people all along, except for our drinking, what need is there for a moral inventory now that we are sober? You can take that out just a stretch. Al-Anons have a horrible problem. I have a little book study I do for Al-Anon on Monday mornings. But they're not very many show up, let me tell you. And all human beings could use a moral inventory. Do you understand? All. But most are not going to come to a place in which their lives are threatened by a disease called alcoholism, that they're going to have to turn to their God. What am I doing here? I'm trying to apply a spiritual solution to a physical and mental problem in which there is no known cure. That's what I'm doing here. Does that make sense to you? Okay. Here's another one, third one. We also clutch at another wonderful excuse for avoiding an inventory. Man, I've heard this one 1,000 times. I'll get around to it any day now. Our present anxieties and troubles require caused by the behavior of other people, people who really need a moral inventory. We firmly believe that if only they treat us better, we'd be all right. Therefore, we think our indignation is justified and reasonable, that our resentments are the right kind, and we aren't the guilty ones, they are. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. But they don't need to go to God to survive. See, I won't survive here. I'll die. I'm talking about die. Or worse yet, I won't die. I'll go dry. And man, that's like death without falling down and laying down. It's terrible. Here's your answers now to the first one. Here's what you do for it. At this stage of the inventory process, our sponsors come to the rescue. They can do this, for they're the carriers of AA's tested experience with step 4. They comfort the melancholy one first by showing him that his case is not strange or different, that his character defects are probably no more numerous or worse than any of those of anyone else in AA, or the world, I wrote. This the sponsor promptly proves by talking freely and easily and without exhibition about his own defects, past and present. So I have no problem in sitting with another man and telling him a few things about myself that I would not normally like anybody to know, that I'm ashamed of, that I know right from wrong, that I did and have done. This calm and yet realistic stock-taking is measurably reassuring. The sponsor probably points out the newcomer has some assets that he can note along with his liabilities. These are promises now. This tends to clear away morbidity and encourage balance. As soon as we begin to be more objective, the newcomer can fearlessly, rather than fearfully, look at his own defects. Big deal. Okay, now in that pile of paperwork you got, you ought to have something that looks like this one. Yeah, now why did you do that? That's all right. I'll find it again in a minute. Somewhere in there, I'll go back to it. So he's talking about an asset list. And this is the asset list that I use. Now, this is a 10-step inventory we'll get to later. This is not what we're trying to look for. But we're going to take a look at an asset list. And it includes, the first page says all jobs. Okay? And I'm talking about jobs you did as a kid. You start in with the first job you ever did. Maybe it made your bed, I don't know, whatever it was. Or maybe you washed dishes with mama, or maybe you mowed the yard, or maybe you threw newspapers, or maybe you worked at the motion picture house, or maybe, these are what things I have done. Maybe you worked at the Safeway store till they fired you. I mean, you know, things like that. I'm good at getting them jobs, hard to stay with them sometimes. And I want to make a list of all jobs, starting with my young, and then my paying jobs. And I want to come right on up, okay? I want you to notice as we do this that everything on here is an asset. I will not allow him to write anything negative yet, okay? It's all, because he's already got all that he can stand. Things I like to do, put sex right on top, okay? Let's get past that one. And we start working our way down, things I like to do. Now, you may not be doing them, but things you like to do. Maybe you like to snow ski. Maybe you like to water ski. Maybe you like to swim. Maybe you like to go to the ocean. Maybe you like to, I don't know. But you write them down. Things you like to do. Okay? The next one is people who love me. Oh, that's a hard one for the depressed kind. They don't think people love them. People who love me. Sometimes they make it really hard for people to love them, you know. People who love me. You cannot have love if you will not give love. You cannot have what you will not give in this world. Okay? Next one is health. I have glasses. I have false teeth. You got another one?
People who I love.
People who I love. Did I find that one yet? Okay, that's good. Okay, so you write down people you love. That's good. Sometimes they'll be the same people, but not always. Okay. I'm going to health now. Some reason I got messed up. That's good. So health. What about your health? You know, do you have a health plan? Do you have a dental plan? Do you, I'm getting ready to go in for a little work down to VA. That's who takes care of my health plan. They do a good job. I'm very fortunate to have that. I have glasses, great stuff. I have false teeth. They're wonderful. I don't even have to worry about whiteners anymore. You stick them in a glass with some water and throw a pill in there, and when you get up the next day, they're brilliant. I got that Pepsin smile. I had these teeth done where I could get them done, and so I had to go to the dental college over in San Francisco, a lot cheaper. And little old girl's just graduating from dental school, and I come in one day, and she's got this chart out, and she's trying to match up my old teeth. And I said, what are you doing? She said, well, I want to get them to the most natural color you have. I said, no, I want them pure white. Pure white. You know, I got people out there every day got whiteners going just trying to get them white. All right. So we have things I own. And I'm talking about your shorts, your panties, your pantyhose, your socks, your shoes, your bracelets, your necklaces, your car, you just name it. What do you own? Long list. Things you own. Friends. People you're friendly with. I am friendly with a lot of people today. I go to the Safeway store and it looks like a store of recovery when I get there. I'm walking down the aisle and some little girl's tackling my leg, you know, one of them 5-footers going, hey, oh, Don Brown, God bless you, you know. The Al-Anon standing at the checkout stand. Come over here. We are friendly. There's a difference between, I'm not talking about deep, loving, caring friends. I'm just talking about friendliness with people. I'm friendly at the bank. How are you, Mr. Brown? I'm just fine. You know, I just have a great life today. Friends. And the last one we have on here we want to talk about is achievements, awards, and school. If you can swim, it ought to be on here. If you can water ski, it ought to be on here. If you can make, maybe you're a carpenter, you can make a table, it ought to be on here. If you have a doctor's degree, it ought to be on here. If you got to the third grade, it ought to be on here. At least you got that far. If you can run a computer, I can't, it ought to be on here. I mean, anything, achievements, awards. If you got a driver's license in AA, that's a real achievement. I mean, you know, a lot of us don't have a driver's license. Let me tell you, you know, they took that sucker away a long time ago. In school, see. So what do you end up with? You end up with an entire attitude adjustment list. You end up with a bunch of assets that you give to the guy who's so depressed, he's telling you there's nothing worth to live for, and you're saying, look, there's something wrong with your thinking. You've got a huge asset list, and you're telling me there's just nothing to live for. I see that a lot of people that come to AA that have got everything in the world. You couldn't buy another thing. Well, they do. They got to take it out of the house to get rid of it to get space for the next thing. There's just nothing they don't have, and they are miserable. So I think sometimes we might put too much into. There's nothing wrong with having things. There's nothing wrong with that at all. God wants you to have things, I think. All right, so let's go back. Now we've done that. I think I'm done with you there. And I now I want to read one more line to you here. It's pretty good. This will make you feel good. Page 53. Step 4 is not very much fun work, let me tell you. But more than it does good stuff for us. It says, page 53, 2 lines down, it says, but it is from our twisted relationships with family, friends, and society at large that many of us have suffered the most. Whoa, I said, yes, that's me. We've been especially stupid and stubborn about them. I don't want to be stupid and stubborn. Yeah, well, I was. The primary fact we fail to recognize is our total inability to form a true partnership with another human being. How do you like those words? They don't make you feel very good, does it? Because it goes counter to your instincts. It is not, you ask anybody, most folks, even those who have been married a while, when they lose their mate, there's something leaves their life that is not, that's not the way God planned it. So some will go out and find a new mate, some won't. But companionship in life is part of life. So he said the primary factor fail to recognize our total inability to form a true partnership with another human being. Our ignominious dig two disastrous pitfalls. Either we insist upon dominating the people we know or we depend upon them far too much. Isn't that amazing? Neither one works. If we lean too heavily on people, they will sooner or later fail us, for they're humans too, not gods, and cannot possibly meet our incessant demands. I'm going to the world of the world trying to get what only God can give. I'm trying to get something from another human being they can't give. And guess what? Man, that relationship won't work. And you'll start trying to find ways to blame whatever goes on. In this way, our insecurities grow and fester. When we habitually try to manipulate others to our own willful desires, they revolt and resist us heavily. You betcha. Because they're autonomous spirits. Then we develop hurt feelings, a sense of persecution, and a desire to retaliate. This thing isn't working. What do I do? As we redouble our efforts at control, control wasn't working to start with. Now I'm going to double up on it, right? That'll do it. Man, I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to make it work. And continue to fail, our suffering becomes acute and constant. We have not once sought to be one in a family, to be a family among friends, to be a worker among workers, to be a useful member of society. Selfish and self-centeredness to the depths. Always we tried to struggle to the top of the heap or hide underneath it. I am one who will, if I can't lead, I certainly won't follow. I heard Mike say that this morning. This self-centered behavior blocked a partnership or relationship with any one of those about us. Of true brotherhood, we had small comprehension. Whew, that's rough to take. That's hard. That's truly hard. It really is. All right. So, let's take a look back in our big book now that we've beat you over the head with that bloody stuff. So he says, therefore, we started out on a personal inventory. This is step four. Now, I want you to look at the pages as we go along so we can get some ideas. I'm going to talk about the actual writing of one. The simpler, the better. That makes sense? The simpler, the better. Social instinct, he says, companionship, wanting to belong or be accepted, prestige, wanting to be recognized or to be accepted as a leader, self-esteem, what we think of ourselves, high or low. And we're going to have a lot of trouble with that one, I can tell you now. Pride and excessive and unjustified opinion of oneself, either positive self-love or negative self-hate. Personal relationships, our relationships with other human beings and the world around us. Ambitions, our plan to gain acceptance, power, recognition, prestige, and etc. So we go to the security instinct. Material, wanting money, building, property, clothing, etc. in order to be secure in the person. Nothing wrong with any of that, if I let God bring it. Emotions based upon our need for another person or person. Some tend to dominate, others are overly dependent on others. Ambitions are plans to gain material wealth or to dominate or depend upon others. Sex instinct, acceptable, our sex lives is accepted by society, God's principles, our own principles. Hidden, our sex lives that are contrary to either society, God's principles, our own principles. Ambitions, our plans regarding our sex lives, either acceptable or hidden. And he's talking about in the now. Make up self. And then he directs you to what's wrong. My resentment, fears, and harms is what's got me blocked from God. That's why we're going to review them. And as long as I have them, I lose power. I cannot afford them today because I lose power. If I lose power, God can't work through me. I'm just sitting around. I can't walk my talk. I'm just sitting around in meetings talking about stuff and going right out and doing stuff. He says resentments, a feeling of bitter hurt or indignation, which comes from rightly or wrongly held feelings of being injured or offended. Look at that word, rightly or wrongly held feelings. Most people tell you it's all your fault. That's not true. Fear. Fear of anxiety, agitation, uneasiness, apprehension. That's how that feels. Harms or hurts, wrong acts which result in pain, hurt feelings, worry, financial loss, etc. for others and also self. Okay. So we're going to take on, now we got the description of what we're looking at, open your page up. And what I do is I write in the column 3, over column 3, I write God. I just write his name, God. You write whatever you want to, that's what I use. And over column 4, I write God. The whole idea of my inventory, I want to know, there's about 8 inventories in the book if you want to stretch them out and look at them. They're all there for the same reason, to find out what my relationship with God is at that moment in time. Sometimes I do an inventory during the day just to see where I'm at with God. 10-step inventory, where am I at night? All kinds of inventories. We'll get into that. We'll read about some of them, talk about some of them a little bit. But this particular inventory is I'm going to take is going to free me to get power into my life. Does that make sense to everybody? I need that power, and I can't have it as long as I got the resentment, fears, and harms. I'm fooling myself. Not going to happen. I can't afford to have a resentment with you. I got off the debating society a long time ago. Things happen to me sometimes I don't like. Doesn't make any difference. My sponsor says that which works is God's will, that which does not is not. Your job is to quit doing the is not as quick as possible. Oh boy, thanks, sponsor.